Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:12 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 28th. Today was very much a day of two halves in the early part of trading. The majority of Wall Street indices were in positive territory, but they gave it up by the close. And certainly we had some rather big moves. When we think about the significant decline, for example, in Kraft Heinz, that brings into perspective the argument that has been made persistently about the value of intangible assets that are sitting on some of these corporate balance sheets. On the bullish side, you've got companies like Facebook or Google, where their intangible assets are built on their data and their customer base. But when it comes to a company like Kraft Heinz, well, I think people are more thinking about the integrity of their businesses against a background where people are starting to think more about healthy options. Well, that is certainly behind the very significant pop on the upside, for example, that we had on Beyond Meats in here today. It was up nearly $7 on an $86 share. That's a very significant move. It's multiples of where it IPO'd back at the beginning of the month. Now, the valuation is stretched, and there's probably going to be some form of consolidation eventually, but people are certainly still looking on it with some favorable perspectives. Then, when we think about what else is going on in terms of the technology sector, well, AMD, for example, was up about 10% in here today, and that is reasserting on the upside. And this has been one of the more impressive rebounds off the lows put in December. And it was on the back of a re or the announcement of a release of a new desktop chip, which is going to compete and potentially outperform Intel. And that is the reason Intel was pulling back so sharply in here today. It's obviously not just this news that has been weighing on the share, but it is right in the region of the lower side of this range. This is exactly where it's going to have to demonstrate support if we're going to have or there's going to be any semblance of support building still in the share price. Now, when we think about the wider environment, the S&P 500 was in negative territory today, not down by a full percent, but not far off it either. It's right in the region of the trend mean, so this is an area where we can anticipate some back and forth action. But I believe that the primary reason why we're starting to see some angst in stocks is because the treasury prices have not just paused here in the region of the peak from back in March, the breaking out. And this is one of the more consistent trends anywhere. There is a sequence of higher reaction lows, higher highs, one range above another. This is a staircase step sequence uptrend. The next area of potential resistance, if this staircase is going to persist, is at 127.5. It was up a half a point in here today. Then I think when you flip it over and you look at the treasury yield, it failed to sustain the breakout above 3% last year. The dynamic of the failure was larger than the dynamic of the breakout. And that suggests that the yield is going to go back down and test the lower side of the range. And the lower side of the range is at 1.5%. When I said that at the AAPTA conference, the American Association of Professional Technical Analysts conference, back in April, and I said that there's a potential that it could go back down and test the 1.5% area, I think most people thought I was off my rocker. But this is a consistent trend, and it's going to have to at least break the sequence of lower rally highs to question that this isn't still a consistent downtrend. Well, that very clearly says that investors are not only pricing in that we're at the top of the interest rate cycle, they are also pricing in the potential that we're going to get a response to the next recession, which amounts to unlimited buying of treasuries. and the two-year yield is now down to 2.12%. There are two ways of looking at this. One is that the bond market is pricing in trouble and pricing in the very real potential that there are going to be interest rate cuts. The S&P 500 is beginning to become alert to that potential as well, so that's why it is a little bit weaker. And the yield curve spread is down to around 13 basis points, although it was at 14 by the close in here today. This is now right in the region of the lower side of the range, and it has been ranging above 10 basis points for the better part of 6 months, but there hasn't been a sustained break above the 20 basis point level. It could have done that at the end of April, but it failed. And when failing, and the dynamic of the failure again was larger than the dynamic of the breakout, well, that suggests we're at least going to go back down and test the 10 area. So people are starting to price in the potential that we are moving towards a recessionary environment. Now, it generally tells us that when you get an inverted yield curve that we have a significant lead time to that, anything from 6 to 18 months. One thing that did, I think, begin to factor into what people are thinking about is that the pace with which home prices are expanding is continuing to contract. They were rising at a 14% per annum level back in 2013. Now it's down to 2.6%. So the pace of the expansion in home prices is moderating, not least because prices on average are in excess of where they were back in 2007. That is one of the very real conclusions that we can draw from quantitative easing. It has been phenomenally successful in inflating asset prices, but not so great at improving the ability of people to afford to pay those prices. That is, I think, the primary reason why we have this jump in populism. And of course, we do have the results of the European elections to contend with in here today. And the euro was in negative territory. It still has this sequence of lower rally highs. Every single time that it has bounced, it has failed to break that sequence of lower rally highs. And until it does so, we can really just give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. Following the success of both the Brexit Party and the Green Party, not the Green Party, that was pretty much everywhere else in Europe except the UK, the Liberal Democrats in the UK, then the gold price has moderated because the dollar was strong. But when we think about that in terms of the British pound, well, the British pound was in weak territory yesterday and again in here today. The Conservatives and Labour have been beaten into a fourth and third position respectively. That has resulted in the candidates for the Conservatives moving more towards the Brexit argument, and Jeremy Corbyn finally giving in and moving towards a second referendum argument. That, in fact, has created more polarisation. That's been the response of the two main parties to the result of the European elections. It rather pushes out the conclusion to the Brexit argument further rather than nearer, I suspect, at least until the Conservatives pick a new leader, and then that person has got some time in which to negotiate. The pound, though, has got to demonstrate support around this 126 area. When we think about it versus the euro, it also failed to sustain the upward break, and now it is below the trend mean. It's going to need a clear upward dynamic to question that this isn't a potential scenario where the 110 area is going to get tested. So the failure leads to a test of the lower side of the underlying trading range. What I find particularly interesting right now in terms of gold is when we start to look at it in different currencies, because it's just about holding its own versus the US dollar. It's been largely range-bound, albeit with a mild upward bias over the course of the last few years. But what I find interesting right now is to look at it in renminbi. when we look at it, and particularly over the course of about a decade, it has failed at the 9,000 renminbi level on a number of occasions since 2016, but the downward bias since 2016 has definitely been broken. And when we then think about the outlook for the renminbi itself, well, it continues to weaken. And it has also been ranging below the 7 level since 2016. Well, I don't think there is, this isn't a particularly insightful conclusion. It's simple. If the renminbi breaks through 7, then gold in renminbi is going to break out. And China is the biggest producer of gold, it's one of the biggest consumers of gold, and if the price breaks above 7, then that is likely to be a catalytic event in terms of demand growth. And there is a realistic possibility that we are going to see it at least test the 7 level. The Shanghai A-shares market was really quite volatile over the last couple of days. It had an upside Q reversal yesterday and just about was able to hold on to an advance in here today. The fact that we've had two upside Q reversals this month and then one downside Q reversal, well, that's quite unusual action that we get such dramatic moves that are reversing earlier advances or earlier declines in the space of a month. That tells us that there's a war going on here and that the administration in China is supporting the stock market in the region of the trend mean. And I continue to think that it is the banking sector where we're going to see the greatest evidence of support, and that is also firming from the region of the trend mean. It is very much within the interests of the communist administration to ensure that there is not a run on banks, that or that there isn't a source of panic. That's why they're supporting the currency. That's why they're supporting the stock market. But at the same time, they need to have some outlet for pressures that are building, and the currency is almost undoubtedly going to be one of those. The continued rally in Bitcoin, and particularly the move higher yesterday, well, that is, I think, very much tied to capital flight from China, considering that Bitcoin is essentially a Chinese cryptocurrency. It is through the 8,000 level. This is a very emphatic break in the downtrend, and it is very suggestive that we are in a new bullish environment where there is going to be, on average, a higher floor to trading on cryptocurrencies generally. What I also find interesting is that Ripple had shown early signs of relative strength, whereas the majority of cryptocurrencies did not bottom until December. Ripple was an early leader and it bottomed in August. And now it is back above the trend mean and starting to do better from here. So I think there is certainly potential for catch-up plays among some of the altcoins. And I also still have my position in the Ethereum market, which is coming up to the upper side of this range that it's been putting in over the last 2 weeks. Now, when we look at what's going on in India, then the market having pulled back sharply to unwind some of the exuberance ahead of the election result, it has stabilized and it is doing better from here. What is, I think, particularly interesting is the banking sector. It has continued to push on to new high ground. It didn't really pull back by very much, and it is just about the only banking sector in the world that is at new highs. If we then zoom back out and look at what's going on in terms of European banks, well, the index was off its lows in here today, and it is right now back in the region of the low from the beginning of this year. And there is a short-term oversold condition, but it has a lot of work to do to demonstrate that we're putting in support in this area. And part of the reason for that is because of Italian government bond yields. And The yield was up in a dynamic manner yesterday, and it was relatively unchanged in here today. But it's the absolute level that is worth paying attention to. At 2.7%, 10-year Italian yields are the highest in the Eurozone right now. For example, if we look at the Greek 10-year yield, then it's quite a bit lower. Or sorry, the trend is downwards, and it is looking like it is going to be lower than Italian yields in the not too distant future. When we think about the relative fortunes of the two markets, where the Greek administration has just called another election, and the strength of the populist administration in Italy suggests that they're going to be around for at least a while. But the broader picture is that the Italian banks represent a significant weighting in the Euro stocks index. The Italian index is back below the trend mean. When we think about the outlook for European equities, what is happening in Italy represents a significant threat. The European Commission is talking about handing down a 4 billion euro fine to Italy, which is sort of an exercise in the ridiculous, considering that the reason that they are blowing out their fiscal limits is because they're trying to stimulate the economy. But from the perspective of Brussels bureaucrats, it makes perfect sense. So that does represent a challenge here, because when we think about the first step above the base characteristics that we have on that Italian government bond yield, well, it is very much supportive of the view that traders are going to start exploring the downside in terms of Italy's or the logical inconsistencies of one country rebelling against the central authority in the Eurozone, and how that is going to be dealt with is likely to be explored by investors over the course of the next few months and probably the next 12 months. Of course, that is also one of the reasons why the euro is still weak. Well, when we have a weak pound and a weak euro, then gold is doing better against those currencies, and it's also doing better against the Indian rupee and the Chinese renminbi, but of course it is not doing better against the dollar, the yen, or the Swiss franc, which are historically safe haven assets. And the continued rally in government bonds is a signal that there is money getting taken off the table here, that people are starting to become more risk averse. And I think when we think about that perspective in view of the stock market over a lengthier time frame, it's been ranging for just about a year and a half already, and we certainly had a incredibly impressive rebound off the lows in December, and some consolidation of that is now underway. The much bigger question is how much of that advance are we going to hold? It was rather predictable that we're going to get some consolidation. The extent of that consolidation is the big unknown. And now we are back in the region of the trend mean, where we can anticipate some back and forth action. Now the arguments are going to start ramping up. There are going to be some people saying this is a top. There are others who are going to be saying that this is a range, and that the market is going to break on the upside imminently. There are going to be people saying that, well, economic figures are still pretty good, and others are going to say that, well, you don't get recessions when figures are bad. It's usually when things look best that you get a recession. And we know that the yield curve spread is contracting, and that demand for safe haven assets has been increasing. One thing that, if we start to think about the lead indicators, well, oil prices are not surging higher. In fact, they're struggling to find a low in here, although they have been positive over the last three sessions. And gold is not surging higher either. Then unemployment is not increasing. In fact, it's decreasing. And consumer optimism is still pretty okay. Well, Generally speaking, it's unlikely that you're on the cusp of a recession when the consumer is still doing fine. And those, I think, are some of the important things to watch. Where we definitely have evidence of manic activity has been in the private sector, where private equity has been bidding up valuations on companies that don't have any profits or any prospect for profits, and that does represent a challenge. Because some of those are going to, they're going to try and list those on the stock market, which will be a draw on assets committed to various stock market indices. And it also represents a hit to confidence when big IPOs don't do well. And certainly Uber and Lyft were some of those. Well, then we also have to consider that there is the potential that we're going to get additional sources of liquidity, potentially from Europe. The fact that populism did not, in fact, take over in the aftermath of the European elections, but did gain ground. Well, that is not something to celebrate, the fact that the status quo has held, rather that there is still a deeply unsettling rise of populism in Europe, and that it is likely to continue to cause a source of volatility overall. The VIX index is currently around 17.5, and it has bounced from the 15 area, so it is finding support above the previous range. That suggests that we are going to see a further exploring of some of the more bearish hypotheses, that we're going to get more volatility. This is quite likely, in even in a consolidation kind of view. The fact that there are so many arguments outstanding is something that is, I think, rather interesting. There are some people starting to conclude that inflationary pressures could start to rise. It would be, I think, quite normal that in a full employment environment that you could anticipate that wage demand growth would start to pick up, and that would be inflationary. And commodity prices are starting to pick up. Oil prices might not have got a great deal of room to rally, but grain prices are breaking on the upside, and that is starting to demonstrate support in the region of the lower side of this range on the continuous commodity index. The corn price, for example, is really quite firm, and it is now through the $4 area. You can see the cyclicality in terms of the base formation put in over the last 5 years. So the change of contract in July does tend to result in a change in terms of demand. The big question for a lot of these commodities is the health of the winter crops. Soybeans is rallying off the lower side of its range, and wheat is doing the same. And the wheat price is, I think, probably going to be one of the more volatile ones. But oats, which is, I think, could be considered one of the minor commodities, is also breaking on the upside in here. So there is the possibility that food prices are going to be getting more expensive, particularly for staples. And that's probably less of a factor for developed markets than it is for emerging markets. And this is all happening in an environment where the dollar is still firm. So that is a double hit for global consumers of grains. The dollar continues to hold its sequence of higher reaction lows. As long as it is doing that, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. One of the more dynamic moves that we saw in the currency markets today was the rand, and it has now pushed right up to, or the dollar has pushed right up to test the peaks it's put in over the course of the last 8 months. And this is one of the more dynamic moves we've seen. If it sustains the move above 14.5, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment for the dollar. And there is the real possibility that the rand is going to go back and test at some significant lows at between 16 and 18. The big question is, how effective is the new South African regime going to be in enacting reform? And we just don't have an answer to that question just yet, and that does represent a challenge. And I think with that, I will leave it for today and wish all the best to all of you.